The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by Justin Wood and Paul Stevens of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for December 10th, 2012. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Army Corps of Engineers say they will not release more water from the Missouri River to keep barges running on the Mississippi. We'll have that and other stories. Todd Gleason will be by with University of Illinois agricultural economist Darrell Good to discuss corn futures. And the folks from Chesapeake Energy will be by with the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Good afternoon, everyone. Let's look at the last trades in Kansas City. December wheat, 889.5, down 6.5. May, 915.25, down 4.25. In Chicago, now settlements. December wheat, 832.75, down 11.5. May, 860.25, down 10. Back to last trades. Corn pit, December, 725, down 7.75. March, 729.5, down 7.75. July, 731.25, down 4.25. And December 13, 636, down 1.75. Last trade in the soybean pit, January, 1473, up 3/4. March, 1473, up 1. July, 1452, up 10.5. November 13, 1332.5, up 3.5. Last trades for soybean meal, December, 452.80, up 2.30. December soybean oil, last trade there at 50.37, down 45. Now over in the livestock last trade, live cattle December, 125.75, down 12.5. And January feeders, 149.77.5, and they are up 100. And those are the last trades and settlements in Kansas City and in Chicago.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Leonard's weather highlights, he says bitter cold temperatures occurred in the central U.S. plains this morning. Winter kill conditions may have occurred in a few wheat fields in Nebraska, northwestern Kansas, and northeastern Colorado due to temperatures near and slightly below 0 degrees Fahrenheit with no snow on the ground. Argentina grain and oilseed areas were quite warm and mostly dry during the weekend. Argentina will receive some rain today and again during the coming weekend. Amounts will not be heavy, but they will set back a drying trend for some areas. Rain will be greatest for northern Buenos Aires to southern Santa Fe and Estereos today and early Tuesday. Temperatures will continue to be warm between rain events. Brazil will see routinely occurring rain and thunderstorms through the next 10 days. Northeastern parts of the nation will be the driest this work week, but all areas will be impacted eventually, and sufficient amounts will occur to support this year's crops.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Fairly impressive performance, I think, Kurt, in the soybean pit today, given what we saw this morning. And futures were definitely on the defensive, and they managed to claw their way back and finish in positive territory in a few contracts, like the July 13 double digits.
Yeah, we saw some renewed buying interest as we went through the day there. So like you mentioned, there saw a follow-through selling from Friday's reversal down. But as the day wore on, we saw news of a little drier forecast for the parts of Brazil. Also, we heard talk of maybe a little bit more bean business to Asia. Then lastly, tomorrow's supply-demand balance is expected to be a little tighter than in November. November showed 140 million bushel bean carryout. Ideas are with the aggressive export pace we've seen here that they may tighten the carryout estimate up to 130 million metric tons. Not super tight, but the idea that things could be a little tighter as we move down the road gave the market some enthusiasm. Funds bought an estimated 5,000 contracts of beans going into midday. Then we saw quite a bit of popularity of the bean-corn spread with beans, the potential positive commodity here versus the corn due to a little slower export demand for corn.
And the corn ends up at the bottom of its channel, the three-month-plus channel that's been going sideways.
Yeah, we need to find some support here in this March corn as we approach this 720 area. Mow momentum indicators have been down hard here for the last week and a half. We're starting to get down to levels that warrant some short covering. It's just a question when or where. But until we can shake off this bearish export news, it's going to be awful hard to get something big going. On tomorrow, you know, the trade's kind of dialed in a little bit bigger corn estimate. Slow export inspections, you know, indicate that the exports just aren't there. We saw that we only shipped out about 7.8 million bushels of corn. We're running about 50% of a year ago, and ideas are the export number can be a little smaller. However, though, we look for that miscellaneous category feed usage to absorb a little bit of that, so we don't see a great big increase in corn carryout numbers tomorrow.
So potentially U.S. ending stocks might go up. When you look at the world corn production picture, might we see that USDA makes adjustment in Argentina and we see world production for corn go down a little?
Yeah, that could be a highlight number tomorrow. You know, I remember, though, the Chinese corn numbers going to remain you know, somewhat big. A year ago, we saw Argentine corn production at 21 million metric tons. Last month, they were 28. So it's got some room to come down, basically, due to their adverse weather pattern. They were sort of counting for a decent Argentine crop to sort of help satisfy the needs here as we go into this spring.
So this spreading, buying the soybeans, selling the corn, do you think this will be a feature on the balance of the week?
It'll probably change come tomorrow after we see what the numbers show. But right now, that is the popular stance to have right now. That is the trend until we see some demand pick up in corn. It's probably going to be the main feature. Also, too, when you visit with producers, you know, we're finding that you know, they're not willing to be a seller right now, but yet, too, the end user's not willing to be a buyer. When you look at who needs what, it seems that most of the end users are fairly well satisfied where they're at and have coverage going into this late winter, early spring time window.
And if there are needs, it looks like quick shipments are still available from Brazil.
Yeah, I mean, Yeah, that's a good observation. On the world scale, we're going to see end user pretty well push the pencil, see which is the best option to go with. They don't have a huge amount of supply to work with. We're about the only ones got a big supply to work with on the larger scale. So we'll see what develops here as we move through the early winter months.
So if the trade is shocked by a number in WASDE tomorrow, what number likely would it be?
Well, I don't know if there's one they could really shock anyone with. It would be a shock if they would just harvest the acres with everyone waiting to see what the numbers are on the January report. That would be a shock if that would come out earlier. Otherwise, on the domestic supply-demand balance sheet, it's just going to be a balancing act. They're going to subtract from one category and add to another category. I don't believe there's going to be a big change at all looking at the domestic numbers.
Well, look, is there any reason why USDA and NASS couldn't move those numbers November? I mean, harvest has been well over for a while.
It could very well. You know, their track record's been to be a slow mover. They're under a great deal of pressure to get it right. You think with today's technology, you'd be able to see those numbers or have those numbers at a push of a button, but I guess we're just not there yet, Dave.
Turn your attention to the wheat market. What are you seeing there?
Some profit-taking, unwinding of the long wheat, short bean spread, same as like we saw in the corn in there. A little bit of a slowdown in near-term demand. The bearish break kind of kicked in through here, but it's kind of wait and see as we move through the winter here. We're continuing to wear out the news. It's dry out west, and we know that, but from a long-term perspective, we'll see how many times we dip below zero and see how bad the wheat crops get nixed this winter on winter kill.
Is soft red winter wheat undervalued?
Well, that's a tough one there. I think soft red winter wheat is going for a ride with hard red winter wheat.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the production concerns is out west. We've got ample acreage here in the east. And I think it's going to be probably the weaker link, but it's still got potential if the western wheat belt gets hammered pretty hard this winter.
After we dust off and move beyond the WASDE report tomorrow, what will be the features of the balance of the week fundamentally?
Well, we'll see if we see some renewed world interest. Last go-around on the price break, Egypt stepped up and bought some U.S. wheat. So we'll see who comes forward to get some coverage on. The report's going to continue to indicate a little tighter world wheat situation than what we've been accustomed to over the last 25 to 30 years.
And before we let you go, we have to get your thought on the fiscal cliff. It does appear we're still at impasse. If we're at impasse and go over the side, what does it mean for commodities?
Well, I think commodities probably getting a little wore out just trying to trade which way the wind's blowing from. I think it's pretty well safe to say they're going to wait till the very last minute to come to an agreement. And why the American public puts up with that, I have no idea.
Thank you, Kurt.
Take care.
That's Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Army Corps of Engineers has decided not to increase water releases from Gavin's Point Dam on the Missouri River to support barge traffic on the Mississippi River. Army Assistant Secretary Joe Ellen Darcy said in a letter that it was not necessary to boost water flows since an updated National Weather Service forecast showed the Mississippi water level was not falling as rapidly as expected. It's estimated that overall, $7 billion of goods are expected to face delays getting up or down the river in the next 2 months. Darcy notes in her letter that the Corps is legislatively bound to act in the best interest of the Missouri River and not the Mississippi. The Mississippi River water level is about 13 feet as of Friday, several feet above the level where barges need to start being loaded lighter. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin was part of a group of legislators that held a private meeting with Darcy last week. Durbin says he wants to have another meeting with her that includes barge operators and river-dependent businesses so Darcy can, quote, spell out to them in as much detail as possible her vision of getting through this challenge without serious disruption to the economy. McDonald's Corporation says a key sales figure rose in November. McDonald's says global sales at restaurants open at least 13 months rose 2.4% for the month ending November 30th. The figure rose 2.5% in the U.S. and rose 1.4% in Europe. The Speaker of Russia's lower house says it will quickly retaliate against trade and human rights legislation approved by the U.S. Senate that imposes sanctions on Russian officials accused of rights violations. Russia moved last week to require all shipments of U.S. beef and pork to be tested free of an animal feed additive called ractopamine. The measure effectively amounts to a ban as the U.S. considers ractopamine safe and does not run such tests. Moscow's move is widely seen as retaliation for the U.S. legislation passed on Thursday last week. Japan's economy is technically in a recession after authorities said revised figures for the April-June quarter showed the economy shrank for two straight quarters. The Cabinet Office today says that gross domestic product for the July-September quarter shrank 0.9% from the previous quarter. Going back to the April-June quarter, however, GDP was revised to a 0.3% decline from the previous quarter, or a 0.1% contraction at an annualized pace. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Farmers have been waiting, watching, and wondering when the price of corn will drop. Not yet, says University of Illinois agricultural economist Daryl Good. Todd Gleason has more.
Corn prices peaked in August, moved sharply lower in September, and have been in a sideways pattern over the past 2 months. Within that sideways pattern, says University of Illinois agri-economist Daryl Good, prices have moved higher over the past 2 weeks, with March 2013 futures trading within 10 cents of the post-September high. The recent rally has been fueled by some supply concerns and more optimism about near-term demand.
There are two concerns about potential supply of corn. First, the ongoing wet weather in Argentina may reduce the magnitude of planted area of corn relative to intentions. Fewer acres would threaten the projected rebound in production. The USDA has forecast the 2013 harvest at a record 1.1 billion bushels, a third larger than the drought-reduced harvest of earlier this year.
The second supply concern, says Good, is the continuation of widespread drought conditions in the United States and its potential impact on next year's corn crop. It's tempered by the alternative. That would be a normal growing season.
The production risk of continuing drought conditions is being balanced against the potential of a record corn harvest if acreage is not reduced and 2013 growing season weather is generally favorable for corn yields. That balancing act is reflected in futures prices for the 2013 crop that are below old crop prices but are high by historic standards.
Other factors in the marketplace include the pace of U.S. corn exports, which remain very slow, ethanol production, which by force of law is plateauing, and the rate of feed use of corn.
The USDA projects use for the year at only 4.15 billion bushels, nearly 9% less than apparent use of last year. However, marketing year feed and residual use projections are confused by the harvest of a large quantity of corn before the start of the 2012 marketing year on September 1. Taken together, current livestock inventories, slaughter numbers, and slaughter weights suggest strong overall feed demand.
USDA's December 1 stocks estimate and the 2012 final U.S. production estimate to be released on January 11th will add some clarity to the corn market fundamentals. Current conditions, however, thanks Darrell Good, point to strong corn prices at least until then. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Amy Murray of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Amy.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, we got word from the Army Corps of Engineers they are not going to release any more water than is absolutely necessary from the Missouri to the Mississippi. And, of course, are keeping close watch on the level of water. It was 13 feet as of Friday. If it gets under 9 feet, barges have to load lighter. I guess what I'm interested in is, if you know, what are the differences price-wise between pushing it down through the Mississippi versus railing it?
You know, it just all kind of depends on what, you know, CIF rates are. And, you know, right now that's going to be a more significant difference. But to my knowledge, it's fairly just volatile depending on what the situation is and what the market is doing. So
can you get train cars right now fairly easily or no?
You can, especially with just the lack of supply that there is out there on the farm moving to the commercial facilities. So, right now, commercials still are holding some grain, but there was a lot of movement this fall. So coming by train cars is not the most difficult task as it can be in some years. So
what is the most difficult task at the moment? Elevator-wise?
It's just going to be finding grain going forward throughout the rest of the year. Obviously, there's going to be some competitive numbers out there, particularly in this immediate area with the aflatoxin issues and how your crop insurance is affected by that. Not a lot got stored, so we're going to be trying to figure out what we can do for our flows for the rest of the year with half of a crop and seeing it all come to market in the fall.
So how much grain do you think is still out there to be pried out of producers' hands?
In this area, really, not much. I would say, you know, maybe 5% of the crop that you would typically see, you know, more towards 50%.
And do you need that crop that bad enough that you will significantly bid up in the on the basis level?
You'll see that, I would say, with people that actually have grain on the farm, since the value of that is going to be greater, for processors and things like that, you're going to see, or I would assume we'll see, basis levels continue to strengthen, particularly for those who are actually holding physical grain.
And why don't we go ahead then and get your prices for today?
Sure. Cash corn is going to be $7.40. January corn at $7.50. March at $7.55. July is at $7.61. Fall corn for next year is going to be $6.17. January for $14.625. Cash beans and January beans today are at $14.80. February and March are at $14.83. July $14.59. New crop fall is going to be at $13.09. Jan 14 soybeans at $13.20. Cash wheat is at $8.13, and new crop July wheat is at $8.34.
Thank you much, Amy.
Thank you.
Amy Murray of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. And I'll be back in 2 minutes with a look at agricultural weather. It's National Lager Day. Lager yeast seems to have emerged during the Roman Empire, and its production faced almost immediate opposition from established brewers and the Roman Catholic Church. Private lager brewers were required to produce their beer outside city walls. On this day in agricultural history in 1864, Henry Rowell Schoolcraft died. An American explorer, he is noted for his discovery of the source of the Mississippi River in a lake in northern Minnesota, which he named Lake Itasca. Schoolcraft published an account of the journey in a narrative journal of travels through the northwestern regions to the sources of the Mississippi River. In 1855, Henry Ridley was born. An English botanist, he was largely responsible for establishing the rubber industry. His experiments convinced him of the enormous economic potential of rubber as a plantation crop. His principal contribution was to develop what is still today the basic method for tapping the tree, the removal at each tapping of a thin layer of bark from the end cut, thus permitting a smooth flow of latex and allowing the bark to regenerate. And in 1877, Dr. Jared Kirtland died, a physician, naturalist, botanist, and teacher. He is credited with developing 26 varieties of cherries and 6 varieties of pears. And that's This Day in Agricultural History. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with our look at agricultural weather is meteorologist Mark Russo from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I do want to get to local burr cold conditions here in the Midwest. But before I do that, I want to move out to the plains and wonder if did we see some winter kill potentially today?
We don't think so, Dave, with the cold weather that transpired here or is ongoing across the plains and the whole middle of the country. You had protective snow cover across much of the coldest areas, in areas of the northern plains, the Montana, the Dakotas, and the Wyoming, that did see temperatures drop into the negative teens here this morning. Further south, you did have a bit warmer temperatures. In areas of Nebraska, actually, snow cover was limited, and you dropped right to around 0 degrees or a few degrees colder. But even those type of levels typically do not cause any kind of significant winter kill damage. So, and the fact that now you're going to be warming up here and the cold will not be long in duration, at least over the next week's time frame, we do not see this as being of any kind of issue.
And no heaving either, where, in other words, the temperature above and below and above and below, pushing plants upward.
No, and a lot of that tends to be an issue when your soils are quite wet or saturated, and that's it's almost the complete opposite there across areas of the plains.
Let's move to here where, burr, it's cold in Chicago.
Yeah, we're seeing this brief shot of Arctic air, although, again, it's like I said, it's going to be brief in nature rather than the start of any long-duration cold pattern here. And following the storm system and some of the snow and flurries in place right now across areas of the eastern Midwest here, we do see temperatures warming up. We see generally dry conditions up until the weekend when the next storm system looks to impact Illinois here in the Midwest.
Turn our attention to South America, where Brazil, for the most part, still looks pretty good.
It does, Dave. And while dryness was beginning to become a concern in portions of Brazil, in the past 5-6 days, it put that to ease as we've seen significant rain development in areas of southern central Brazil. And more is on the way as the pattern remains active throughout much of Brazil over the next couple of weeks. So that continues to boost soil moisture reserves. Very favorable for crop development.
And Argentina also was seeing some rain today, it looks like.
Yeah, and that's almost a continuation from last week's wet conditions, but it does look like dry weather will return here tomorrow. And infrequent rain activity here through the remainder of this week. We do see a more significant rain event the early part of next week. While rainfall has been above normal across Argentina, we don't think it's enough to cause any kind of problems at the present time.
Thank you very much, Mark.
You're welcome, Dave.
That's Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, and that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to subscribe to our free Ag e-newsletter. You can do that at willag.org. Click on the subscribe link in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.